Hello, everyone. I'm Tori.
And I'm Kariana.
And welcome to God in All Things. This week, we are back with more Marvel. We are doing Iron Man 3, which it's been a bit since we've done Iron Man. We did the first two in one episode, so if you haven't seen that, go ahead and check that out. We've also been going through the rest of them, so if you wanted to watch any of those others in order,
Or just your favorites.
Or just your favorites.
Most or all of phase one at this point.
Yes, we've done all of phase one. We're into phase two now, obviously, with Iron Man 3. So
your favorite phase one hero, go listen.
Yes, so we've got it done, and we're going to keep going. So let's start, of course, with the summary like we usually do. I'll have Kariana take that on, and then we'll get into some personal experiences.
Okay, so re-enter Tony Stark, the brazen millionaire known as Iron Man, but now dealing with an unfortunate case of PTSD, causing severe anxiety. His suits have become his crutch, something he uses as a distraction and a false sense of security, until an attack from the past catches up with him, leaving him in a more vulnerable position than he has been in for a while. To overcome this particular adversary, he will have to rely on help from some unexpected sources in unexpected ways.
Well done, as ever. Great. Personal experience. I really don't have a lot to say about this one. It's probably one of my least watched, rewatched Marvel movies. This and probably, honestly, like, the Guardians of the Galaxy films are probably the ones I've just seen the least. They just don't really call to my particular tastes as much. And this one, I just know a lot of people really didn't have good feelings about it. And for a long time, I didn't really appreciate Iron Man to the same extent other people did, which we've kind of talked about before. Not that I've ever disliked him, he just didn't quite meet my tastes as much. As I've gotten older, I've liked him a lot more, and I definitely liked this film a lot more rewatching it. I was telling Kariana I could see people finding it kind of boring in certain ways, because I feel like it has a little bit less of what most people like about Iron Man and his films. I feel like there's just like a little bit less action. It's a little bit more politically driven. There is a lot of action still, but it's a little more spaced out with like just kind of some internal struggle with him. I felt like there wasn't quite as much humor as there were in the first two. Not that it's completely absent, but like a little bit less and a little bit of a different kind as well. And so anyway, I know, like I said, a lot of people don't love it, but I did really like revisiting it. I think it has a lot of really interesting things. I mean, I'm a psychology girl, so I think it just has a lot of interesting psychology things and stuff that we'll get into. But yeah, I would say overall, I enjoy this film. I know a lot of people don't. There's definitely one thing and one reason why I know a lot of people hate it or have like a big issue with it that I would say I have similar feelings probably to most other people. But again, we'll get into that when we get through the plot points and stuff. But anyway, yeah, I feel like that's all I really have to say. Yeah,
I can only guess what you're talking no. about. I have a guess, yes. but I don't know for sure what you're talking about.
You're honestly probably okay. Right. Your guesses.
Yeah, so I mean, same here. I think I only watched it once when it came out, and I don't think I've ever revisited it until now, so it was interesting to go back and rewatch it. I said in our last Iron Man discussion pretty much the reasons why I didn't like this movie as a teenager. I've never liked it, and it's because he blows up the suits at the end, and I blame it all on Pepper Potts.
Yes.
And it's the reason I've hated Pepper for all of these years. I'm like, how can she say that she actually loves him when she just wants him to change and all of this stuff? And then rewatching as an adult, I was like, he really needed to get rid of those suits.
It was a lot more complicated. Like, that
dude, yes, it's so, he's struggling so much. He is not okay. I did not recognize as a kid, like, all of the things going on with him. And the fact that they are so much of a crutch to him, and that he's really not being healthy and not being safe, and that he needs to change some things. And I always thought it was so dumb because he literally just like goes back to being Iron Man. But understanding more of the, it's not like he's giving up being Iron Man necessarily. He just has to recognize like who he is versus what the suits are and what part they play in his life, and come to a better balance for his own emotional and physical health.
Yes, absolutely.
So I did appreciate it a lot more, and really appreciated actually the part that Pepper plays in, not, I don't know if you can call her supportive necessarily, but like in being what he needs her to be. Yes. You know, mm-hmm. which maybe that, you know, if she shouldn't be supportive, then that's the part that she plays. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty spectacular what she is for him. So
yeah, great.
So mind Ariana changed.
Respects Pepper a little bit more.
I do. She's perfect for him, actually. Yeah. I've like really switched, like watching it to, I'm like, oh yeah, like actually doesn't deserve her. Like if we're being really like, honest.
Whoa. That adulthood, like
everything she deals with. Yeah. Yes. The one thing is the fact that she, like, when he has the nightmare and calls the suit and it like starts making to attack her, she like gets up and is like, I'm sleeping downstairs. That was the one moment where I was like,
could be okay. A little more understanding.
We could be more understanding. Yeah, this
but also when you're tired and things like that right? are going on, you're just like, I can't deal with this right now.
It's true. You know? You're exhausted. You've been dealing with a ton. You get attacked in your sleep by a monster that can literally kill you.
Yes, a little scary for sure.
It is understandable. Everybody has a breaking point, so it certainly doesn't make her a bad person. Yes. But it is the one moment that I was like, okay, it's, you were imperfect moment. In this moment. Mm-hmm. But that's a good thing, because yes. if she were perfect, she'd be more boring.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, so let's just get into our gospel principle and then into our discussion. So our gospel principle is small and simple things. One of the most beautiful aspects of God's plan for his children is the fact that he is involved in the small details and uses them to change us. In Alma 37:6, we learn that by small and simple things are great things brought to pass. It's the small things that keep us centered and bring us closer to God. Unfortunately, small moments can lead to pain and sin just as easily if left without a counteraction. As such, we should be cognizant of our small actions and our spontaneous words. Let God guide you in all things, even the seeming insignificant ones, and trust that his greatest miracles will follow. And we're going to get right into a discussion of the film in relation with that. So, starting off the film, we start off, it's in 1999, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. And we hear a voiceover from Tony. He's talking about difficulties he's been dealing with. And so he's like, let's go back to the beginning in 1999 during a New Year's Eve party. And long story short, he ends up meeting up with a woman, as he does, because he's a playboy, and he gets her to take him up to her room, and they're on their way up, and on the way up, he ends up running into this guy who is very dorky looking and nerdy, kind of greasy nerd kind of vibe, and this guy is trying to tell him about this company he's starting to build called AIM, and like what it means, and all of that jazz, and he also kind of converses with the woman that Tony's with, so this woman and this greasy man kind of have a mini conversation, and then he tries to have a conversation with Tony, and Tony basically blows him off, but also like for unnecessary reasons, like tells him, oh, you know, I'll meet you on the roof, like instead of just like brushing him off, he like promises something he knows he's not going to actually do. And so then he ends up going up to the room with the girl, and she kind of shows off some of her recent genetic biology type stuff that she's been working on that has this particular glitch, which comes into play later, where when it basically is looking at ways to have things regenerate, like limbs and things basically. And so she's starting with plants, and like if you break up off a branch, having that just immediately grow back. But when this happens, it ends up blowing up the plant, like whatever, there's some sort of glitch in the mutation that she's working on that makes it do that. So anyway, they sleep together, and then he kind of just ditches her, and he leaves her like with an equation that will help her with her project and stuff. Anyway, so then we flash forward. So that's a big kind of very key moment when we're talking about small and simple things. Like those were a lot of small little things that end up leading to the big like problem in this film.
Yeah, it's interesting. He says at the end of his kind of like intro exposition monologue, he's like, you know, I'm a changed man and I put those days behind me, as it like transitions into his modern day. It's like he put those days behind him, but that doesn't mean that the consequences of them don't exist anymore, you know? And that's something that I actually think can be a really difficult concept to pair with repentance sometimes, where I know I've struggled with and have talked to other people who have struggled with the idea that, like, I've repented for this mistake and I've, like, gone through this and I've changed and I've done better and God has forgiven me and I've forgiven myself, but now it's like catching back up to me and I am still suffering consequences from it. So, like, has God forgiven me? Has God forgotten? Like, I thought that once I repented, like, God remembered my sins no more, you know? But in this life, our actions still matter and you can change and you can repent, but what you do sticks in the world, sometimes in ways that you don't realize it's going to, and that can catch up with you. It can catch up with somebody else. And so it's just another reason, you know, obviously, like, we're all going to make mistakes and it's just going to happen. And so we do the best we can, but it's another reason to just kind of be cognizant of, like, you know, not procrastinating that day of repentance, not thinking eat, drink, and be merry today and then repent tomorrow, right? Like, those actions matter and make a difference in the short run and the long run. It's just kind of the thought. I don't know. I don't know if that fits or not, but it's just the thought that popped into my head.
Recognizing there's the reason why small actions can cause such a big outcome, whether positive or negative, is just like natural law for the most part. Like, natural consequences follow in this life because we're in a natural man world. Right. Like, that's just part of it. And so the divinity of God, when it comes to repentance and that forgiveness, is for primarily the next life. And it may save us from some heartache here as well.
For sure.
But it's not going to save us from all of it. And so we'll continue to see how these natural consequences follow Tony after he's already been through even the events of the Avengers, where he was very self-sacrificial and, like, did really, really good things and is really changing as a person. Like, we, even with, like, Pepper and stuff, compared to this other woman that he was with and how he mistreated her, and now he's treating Pepper better. It's still a work in progress, but, like, he's much more committed and treating her like a person and not like she's just something to be played with. So as we flash forward, we enter more the modern day, and we see very quickly that Tony is not doing okay. So we start off watching him build a new suit that will just kind of fly to him and just come on him. It's like computers chips in his arm.
Yeah,
like,
hated it was everything really nasty about that.
Yeah, really gross. So that in and of itself is like, okay, he's kind of being reckless and risky with what he's doing. And then we have Jarvis mention that he hasn't slept in like 72 hours. Like, it's been a long time, like multiple days that he hasn't slept at all. So we're being shown right off the bat that there's something wrong. Like, he's clearly some sort of trauma is going on. Some sort of psychological thing, which we eventually figure out is trauma from the events of Avengers. Because previous to that, he's been dealing with very earthly threats that he's probably seen similar things. They're more advanced, but similar things on the news growing up and stuff with terrorist attacks and things like that. But now he's faced aliens invading Earth and had to take them on, and that's really haunting him. It just is going beyond anything he would have expected for himself and anything he's been able to handle before. So this is something that continues to go throughout the story. But in the meantime, we're introduced to the Mandarin, who is a figure who continuously is popping into the airwaves of the United States and leaving a message that he is blowing up places as acts of terror. And he's really scary. I'm not gonna lie.
Honestly.
The way they put it together and the way he talks and stuff, he's terrifying. And he's been very successful in murdering a lot of people. And so the people are terrified of him. The president ends up announcing a name change for War Machine, Colonel Rhodes, to the Iron Patriot, to try to have like this figurehead who's going to be going out and fighting the bad guys, which is interesting. All the news channels are like, this is so stupid. This is your response to give him a paint job and call him the Iron Patriot. Right. Like, not very impressive, which is a very interesting look at just like how politics and stuff works in general, for sure. And so after this, Tony ends up meeting with Colonel Rhodes and discussing what the president decided to do and the Iron Patriot, and Tony's like, I really hate that name, that's really stupid. War Machine is way better. And Colonel Rhodes is like, they want to make it sound less violent and intense. Anyway, super interesting. And then this kid comes up to him and asks for Tony's autograph and starts asking these questions about New York. And that's when we see for the first time, like, he is traumatized by New York specifically. That's when he has his first anxiety attack. In fact, he's like starting to feel all of the symptoms that go along with an anxiety attack, and then goes out to his Iron Man suit and gets in and is like, Jarvis, like, check my vitals, what's going on, am I having a heart attack or something? And he's like, no, I think you're just having an anxiety attack, like, you're actually doing fine. But it really is debilitating for him, which is, it's really interesting and really sad to see this guy who's been through so much and done so much just be brought down so much by something that so many of us have experienced in our life. It's a pretty common difficulty to go through, and especially in the situation he's in. And so we're seeing very quickly that he's been very impacted by those events.
Yeah, I agree. It is, it's really depressing to really just watch him, like, kind of fall apart, where he's like, he's being Tony, right? He's like, yeah, autograph, you know, I'm the center of attention, this is so cool.
Yeah.
And then just kind of start to freak out, and then it actually shows for a second on this little girl's drawing that he's signing. He asks for her name, and he has written this little speech bubble that says, Aaron, help me, on it.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. That's so sad.
It's just for like a split second on there that it shows it, and I was like, oh, that's like so, oh my gosh, that's horrible. And it's also interesting because it's the first time that we like really get a clear image of the suits like as a crutch for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously he's been working on the suits this entire time, and he's obsessed with the suits, so like we can see that. But as soon as he starts to feel in danger, as soon as his mind starts to panic and freak out, he's in that suit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And starts asking Jarvis for help. So it makes sense, right? It's justified, like, oh well, Jarvis can scan his vital signs. But I think there still is something to him like jumping into that like protective layer. And then it's also interesting in our theme of small and simple things, and how, I mean, the natural opposite being the fact that we oftentimes tend to complicate the gospel, right? And lots of other things. I think it's interesting that he does ask Jarvis, like, check my vital signs. Am I having a heart attack? Am I dying right now? Am I in danger? He goes to these like really extreme conclusions and is getting this like complicated bodily analysis and all this stuff. And Jarvis is like, it's anxiety,
you
know, like it's this really, really simple, psychologically complex, the way that trauma affects our brains, of course, but it's this, no, you feel stressed out and you're just stressed out. That's what you're feeling. And he just jumps to all of the, he's like, something crazy must be happening. And Jarvis kind of reminds him like, no, you just calm down, you know. I don't mean to like simplify like, you know, the severity that can be an anxiety attack, but you know what I mean.
Like, he's expecting some like specifically life-threatening situation, and it's less than that.
Yeah,
it's kind of like when we're like, oh my gosh, I must have done something horribly wrong and that's why I'm not being blessed this way. Or oh my gosh, I must like have some sort of weakness, or God's mad at me or whatever. And God's like, you're just in mortal life. Like, really? The answer is actually, you're just experiencing mortality.
Yes.
Like, that is usually the answer, especially when we're doing our best and keeping our covenants.
Right.
The majority of the time, our issues are just coming from the fact that we're here.
Yeah.
And so,
and he's like, calm down. You're already doing it right.
Okay?
Just keep going.
You'll be okay. Just
okay.
Those small steps, those little things that you can do. So I guess going forward a little bit more, while Tony's off doing this, having this conversation with Colonel Rhodes, Pepper is meeting with Killian. What's his first name? I can't remember.
Aldrich.
Aldrich. Nice. Nice. No wonder I didn't remember. Aldrich Killian, who is the greasy-haired guy from 1999.
Now not so greasy.
Yes. Now he's cleaned himself up. He's looking great. Honestly, he looks very similar to the guy in the second film, like the bad guy. Anyway, I was like, oh, it's definitely, like, it's a different guy, but, like, they have a very similar kind of look to them and, like, style. Anyway, so I thought it was kind of interesting. But anyway, yes, he's there trying to make a deal with Pepper, with Stark's company, to be funded, basically, for his project to be funded.
And the same project. Yes, it's more advanced, but this AIM
and it's
company.
Used information from the woman. Yes. I wish I remember her name. Maya Hansen is her name. The girl that Tony was with in 1999 as well has joined up, which we don't quite know that yet, but like he kind of hints at similar, like the regenerative
if you
quality.
Were paying attention to her research, you can pick up on the fact that they've joined up. And
likely,
she was showing more interest in him too back in 99,
and he gave her his card, and I think that's what Tony wrote on the back of was that card. So there's like the connections enough that you could probably
guess there's
a strong chance that that's what's going on. Anyway, but apparently too, Pepper had been asked out multiple times by this Aldrich Killian guy, so she goes into this meeting being like, ugh, gross, I don't want to do this, and then sees him and is like, okay, well, you've cleaned up, like we talked about. Anyway, so he kind of talks about what his project is, and she ends up saying there's potential warfare uses for this. It could be used as a weapon, and that's really not what Tony's about these days. That's what we are trying to avoid, so we're gonna have to say no, which he of course is very upset and disappointed by, and we don't really know how upset until later. He starts off sounding pretty okay with it, but anyway, he leaves. Throughout all of this, Happy has been upgraded to the head of security for Stark Industries, and he's very intense about it. He takes it very seriously.
Happy is one of those super well-done characters where he's the kind of personality I would normally expect to really dislike, but he's just so well done.
Yes, he's so endearing.
And Jon Favreau just plays him so well, so endearing, that I'm like, okay, Happy, you can get away with it.
Yes, we can handle you. So anyway, so he's been very concerned, and he actually calls Tony and is like, hey, Pepper's talking to this Aldrich Killian guy, and like,
tries to go
in
the
his
jealousy
brain
route.
And like, yeah, getting him to pay attention. And Tony's like, I don't care, it's fine. And Happy doesn't know how to use his iPad, so like can't like show what's happening or anything. He's like, this is Pepper's the best things that's ever happened to you. You should take more care of her and make sure she stays with you better and da da da. Anyway, Tony's like, whatever, Happy, it's fine. So then Happy kind of does get this interest in Killian and this man that was with him, and ends up seeing the guy that was with him at the Chinese theater and approaches him and stuff. Anyway, one thing leads to another, and we see this dude blow up. It's very similar to the plant at the beginning.
Thank you. So, thank you for that beautiful.
Just to sum it up.
That way with words is astounding. Oh, man.
Anyway,
you know what's funny? I hadn't connected the people blowing up to the plant glitch at the beginning until you said, like, we'll see this later on at the beginning,
really?
Talking about her research. And I was like, oh, it's the glitch.
Yes, still the glitch.
Hadn't thought about
so
that.
So they've cleaned it up a little bit, thanks to Tony's equation, which we also find out later. But yes, so that's what's going on. Happy is in the mix of it, so he is seriously injured to the point where he goes unconscious and is not able to tell Tony or anybody what he saw. But he does kind of like point in a certain direction before he passes out, and specifically it's towards the set of military tags that were on the guy that blew up, who obviously is gone. He blew up. So
but we have a lead.
Yes, but it's a lead and something that can help Tony. So anyway.
So I do have one quote here from another BYU speech, because there are just so many good ones. It's called, "My soul delighteth in plainness unto my people that they may learn," by Claudia J. Danzy in 2004. And this is, I hadn't actually connected this quote to Happy until I just read it, and I was like, oh my gosh. And I told Tori I was thinking about not even including it in my notes, and now it, like, so weirdly specifically applies that now I know why it's in my notes.
Love it. Awesome.
Anyway, she says, she kind of goes through in this talk, she talks about being plain. I can't remember exactly what her three, like, subcategories are, but one of them is, like, keeping the gospel simple, like, being plain in the gospel, and one of them is teaching with plainness, and one of them is speaking with plainness. And so this is in her last one, in speaking with plainness, and she just kind of goes over some different ways to speak with plainness and the benefits of it and how it blesses people and whatnot. And one of the things that she says, honest speaking is as important in compliments as it is in questions and answers. There is great power in a true compliment. It can encourage and lift to great heights. But we all know the difference between a deserved compliment and one given only out of politeness. Find things that are truly good in people and tell them, plain and simple. We shouldn't wait until people die before expressing how much we love them or how much they've done for us. Eulogies are wasted on the dead. Let's lift the living. Think of the building we could do with more plainness, and our compliments will be believed because we are honest. And I just think of Tony. He's, like, so upset by Happy being hurt and being unconscious. He, like, tells the nurses, he's like, make sure everybody has their tags on because everybody's super lax about wearing their tags, but Happy is like, everybody needs to be wearing their tags. Yes. And Tony is like, yeah, everybody needs to be wearing their tags because he would have liked it, and my men outside won't let them in unless they are, you know?
Like, important.
And he's like, play Downton Abbey, he likes it.
He thinks it's elegant.
He thinks it's elegant. Yes, that's what it is. And so, you know, it's like one of those rare moments where we see that Tony, like, actually cares about people and pays attention to them occasionally and knows people. And so just kind of thinking about how that's such, like, an applicable quote for Tony's character and personality, where, like, I mean, if Happy had died, it would have been such a difficult thing for him to move on from, right? And thankfully he didn't, so he didn't have to say goodbye right then, but he waited until that moment before, you know, he's blowing him off. He blows him off, he doesn't take him seriously, all this stuff. He cares about him, and Happy cares about him, and, you know, that was the hymns, but...
You know, we know what you mean.
But yeah, just kind of focusing on, like, am I, like, really letting people know that I do care about them and what I think of them and that I pay attention to them and the things that I appreciate about them before something goes wrong, you know? And that plain speaking, I like that she connects that to plain, honest speaking. And it's simple, keep it simple, you know? Like, you don't need to compliment out of politeness. You don't need to make things up, because usually people can tell plain, simple, honest compliments and appreciation and love shown to people, I think, goes a long way and is really important.
Yeah. Building off of that, when you were first talking about bringing Happy into the, like, simplicity and stuff, I thought you were going to go in the direction of the fact that he did this simple gesture that made everything else in this film possible. Like, he just took the moment, just felt like, you know, I need to let Tony know somehow, but he knew he might not be able to say it.
Yeah.
And so he just, like, points over to it. He didn't have to point over to it, but just, like, following through. And I think sometimes there's, like, little gestures like that maybe pop into our mind, like, we should do. Obviously, this is a very dramatic situation where his mind's going to be turned more towards, like, how can I get information?
Yes,
you know, to
this
Tony.
Is vital.
Like, that's gonna be in his head, but it still is such a simple thing that he just felt like he should do, and he just went for it. He didn't overthink it. And I think that's a really great call to us and a reminder to us that part of the living the gospel and simplicity and appreciating the simple things is God tells us to do very simple things. Like, we talk about revelation. Elder Bednar talks about revelation being most often like a cloudy day where you just see a few steps in front of you. Sometimes those few steps are literally just like write on something or do a little gesture, send someone a text, or look at this website or whatever, just based on your needs. And we so often are like, okay, what is this going to lead to though? Like, am I going to waste my time doing this, Heavenly Father? Like, just tell me, instead of just doing it and trusting that we'll see a few more steps once we've done it. That's something I think I really need to learn in my own life. I feel like, especially right now, there's just been recent enough things things that have caused me to struggle a lot with specific things in my life. And I've kind of had this attitude of like, Heavenly Father, I really don't want to do this if it's not going to go anywhere. Like, I really don't, like, I need you to tell me if it's going to go anywhere, what to expect. And I need to be better at just being like, you know what, even if I don't see where it leads or what it actually does in the grand scheme of things, I need to just, if I feel like I need to do it, I need to just do it. I need to not overthink it, and I need to not let my fears get in the way either.
If I can share a specific story, I believe I told you this story okay. already, mm-hmm. but I just a recent story that I've been telling everybody because I just love it so much, you know? So there's a woman at my work who recently suffered a miscarriage. She told me, because I'm in charge of, you know, her scheduling and stuff. And so she was talking to me about it. And, you know, I was like, go home, don't even worry about anything, like, we'll take care of things, just don't worry about it. And because she was planning on coming in, and I was like, please don't come, stay home, don't come in to work. And then the next day I woke up and I thought, I bet nobody else is gonna think of her, and she just needs to stay home again today, right? And so I texted her and I was like, hey, if you don't want to come in, please stay home, right? But I forgot to tell my boss that I did that. And so I walk into work and he's on the phone with her, and I'm like, no, I told her not to come in. And I was like, just in time for him to like change his words to, I was just checking on you. Everything okay? Instead of, where are you? You know? So I was like, no, I just told her to stay home. And he was like, okay, that's great. And then later that day, he was like, hey, I just told like our more like head manager about what's going on with her. And he was wondering if we should send her something, and you've talked to her more, so I was wondering if you thought that would be appropriate. It was just kind of an interesting text to contemplate, where I was like, I can see where you're coming from. Like, you know, it's a sensitive situation. You don't know how people are going to react. Like, does she want a reminder of it? You know, is it just depressing? But the thought that came to my head was, never suppress a generous thought, you know? And I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. Like, maybe she won't appreciate it. Knowing this girl, I'm like, she'll appreciate it. Yeah. But woman, I should say, whatever. But yeah, I'm like, even if she doesn't, like, that is a good thing to do. That is the right thing to do, you know? Like, that is good. And I think one of the reasons I love the story is because it made me so proud to work for people who would think and be willing to do something like that, you know? I just feel like it applies so perfectly to what you were saying. It's this, like, oh, will she like it? Will she not? Is it too much? Because that can so easily lead to, well, we just won't bother, you know? And that's the, most places wouldn't send her flowers. It's not like she'll be missing flowers if we don't send her flowers, so we just won't send her flowers, instead of creating a beautiful, meaningful moment from a place where you don't normally expect something that beautiful and meaningful, you know, and showing our love and loyalty to her in a way that she doesn't expect to get, which is just extra, and that's good. And anyway, I won't keep saying it's good, but I just love it so much, you know. It made me really, really happy that they were willing to do that. But then at the same time, thinking about, like, I need to, like, I really want to focus on this, like, do good things, you know. Like, you can't, like you were saying, you can't overthink it. Like, you just need to do it. Just if it's good, it, yes. Just do it.
It will probably work out. Yes. If you feel like it's from God and it's not an obviously bad thing.
Right.
Like, yeah.
And if it doesn't, like, God's not going to fault you for that. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate, and you can apologize and do what you can, but, like, in God's eyes, you did a good thing.
Yes.
You know?
You're showing forth that effort. And if you do have the humility and stuff to apologize if something goes wrong for some reason, that's just showing greater willingness to trust God and listen to Him. Fabulous. So I guess moving a little bit more into the plot, since we're already, you know, 45 minutes in and we're not even halfway through the film. So... So anyway, Happy's in the hospital, and we find out the Mandarin takes responsibility for this explosion. And so after we see Tony kind of leave the hospital, and he ends up telling a reporter that he intends to go after the Mandarin himself because now he's attacked one of his friends.
And at this point, only Happy knows that a human was the bomb.
So. Yes. So they have no idea what the bomb was still. Yes,
it was just a terrorist attack at this point.
So Tony goes home and does some research, and he has like this 3D model of the crime scene. And naturally. So cool, you know.
Tony loves his 3D models.
The coolest little technology for that kind of stuff. It's amazing.
I remember being in awe when he started like throwing like holograms around, like little teenage Kariana was like, whoa.
Even this time when he like puts a square around the army tags that he's pointing at and like lifts it up and like takes away the dirt so he could see it. I'm like, how would you even have the technology for that?
Yes. Anyway. And the fact that somebody just like it's such a clever, cool thing to come up with.
Yeah, it's
like,
so neat.
Go creative masterminds of early Marvel. Honestly, is what we're saying.
It's amazing. It's fabulous. So anyway, yes. So he ends up looking and he's just doing research. So he finds the military tags. He starts doing research on where that person came from, if there's been what other attacks there's been, what other signatures that match the attacks there's been, and like where those could have been. And there's one that just particularly grabs his attention because it's pre the Mandarin attacks, but it's very similar to what the Mandarin attacks look like, and it's specifically like a suicide bomber kind of situation. And so he latches onto that and makes a plan to fly out to Tennessee, is where it's at.
This episode has been divided into two parts. You have reached the end of part one. Part two will be released the following Thursday. We hope you enjoyed the first half of our discussion. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at God and All Things Podcast. Additionally, if you are interested in seeing what Tori is currently reading, head over to her YouTube channel, Good Strong Words. Thank you again for listening. We hope you are having a wonderful day. Keep remembering to see God in all things, and we will see you next time.